Hey everyone, this is Wes Colton with the Introvert Unbound podcast. This is the fourth one we're doing, and we're here with C.G. Carroll. He is author of Edges. It's a novel that came out in 2016, and the reason why we're talking to him is because it really gets into elements of masculinity, femininity. He's got these characters that are, in my opinion, really realistic in that they show the different dynamics of how men and women can interact, like sexual attraction and sort of status in a society. So welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Cool. So what made you write this book? What drove you to put this out into the world?
Well, when I first had the idea for the book, I was at the tail end of my only marriage that was kind of falling apart. And I was working on a few projects, and I kind of had this dream one night where this whole plotline, kind of a rough outline of it, came to me. And I thought it was an interesting idea. And I was kind of in a pretty dark place emotionally at the time. I was not able to salvage my relationship with my wife, ex-wife now, and I was getting pretty depressed, and this idea for kind of a drama about a bunch of college students came to me, and it has some corollary with my own experience in college, but I thought I could turn it into almost like a Greek tragedy sort of storyline.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought if I could kind of hang that Greek tragedy on a modern day college setting, I thought that would be interesting.
Yeah.
And I kind of just ran with it and kept writing the story through my divorce, through the separation and then divorce, and then even after for quite a while. Like editing the book and everything that was happening even after I got divorced. So kind of a dark period in my life, but something that brings up lots of emotion, which is usually good for writing. So, that's kind of how it came about.
So you were fueled by the turmoil in your life, and it definitely comes across in the novel. And so the reason why I'm recommending this to people is not just because it's a good book and we can talk about elements of that. This isn't really a literary podcast. I mean, it's just extremely well written, well structured. It's just it's an addictive read. It's surprising because I don't read a lot of things about human relationships. I'm reading a lot of other weird things. So I was surprised by how much I was drawn into this. But I think the reason it's relevant to folks who might be listening to the podcast is because of those different elements of, you know, masculinity. So we have the Patrick character. He's like what I was saying before, the archetypal bad boy. And you draw him in a really realistic way. He doesn't come across as a parody really at all. He seems really realistic. So how did Patrick come across? And maybe talk a little bit about Patrick.
Okay. So Patrick is, he's a junior in college when the story is happening. And he is kind of the leader of this social circle. He's kind of the main point of reference for all the women that are in the social circle. He's kind of like the guy who's the highest, most attractive guy.
Basically. So what many would deem an alpha.
Yeah. He's basically the alpha male of the group. However, he also has these, so to start it out, he is basically pretty confident. He is kind of like a jester type character in certain ways, where he's always kind of fucking with people in the beginning of the book. And he likes to kind of play with social norms a lot and kind of say things that are outlandish to provoke reactions. But he also kind of has this weird mechanism where he's lying to people a lot when there's no real reason to. And he has this beautiful girlfriend named Tiffany.
Right.
And Tiffany's kind of grew up a rich girl and she moved to this, the town it takes place in is Durango, Colorado, which is kind of a small mountain town. So she's kind of a rich girl from the big city displaced in this small town. And that's his girlfriend, but he's been cheating on her with various women. And he kind of has a reputation at the school for being not trustworthy.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of rumors going around about him. But he kind of manipulates manipulates her and manipulates his friends to kind of make it seem like he's innocent and he's not doing anything wrong, really.
Right.
So he has a lot of really attractive characteristics, and he also has some characteristics that make him unlikable and destructive.
Right. So he might fall on what people call the dark triad. So it's the three elements of male personality, which are narcissism, psychopathy, and Machiavellianism. Being Machiavellian. So, you know, narcissism, obviously, you're really self-centered. Psychopathy, you don't have empathy for others, which we can talk about whether that really applies to Patrick, because I think he's a little more, there's a little more depth to him than that. And then being Machiavellian, which is like the idea of being very cunning and all that. And that certainly applies. So clearly he's narcissistic. I mean, he's thinking mostly about himself, about, you know, what he can get out of women, how he can benefit in every situation. So that's pretty much clear. That he's a narcissist.
Yes.
And
he has real strong narcissistic qualities.
Right. And some of which can be attractive in that he's trying to put himself forward in circumstances. I'm not sure if the idea of speaking what is in your mind makes you a narcissist. I would say that that's, you know, maybe one of his positive characteristics that don't tie into narcissism. But then, so being Machiavellian, so the idea of being very cunning, and clearly for him to cheat on his girlfriend and this, he has all these ornate plans to get away with all these different things and the way he's going to lure women into situations. So that applies. But would you say he's a psychopath? Would you say that he has zero empathy or is incapable of feeling empathy for others?
I don't think so.
Yeah.
I think maybe like 5 or 10% on the psychopath level.
Yeah.
I think that he is just a really young man. And he is physically attractive. And when you couple that with his kind of unwavering confidence, just part of his Machiavellian nature is that he kind of feels like he's indestructible and can just do whatever he wants and it'll end up working out okay.
Right.
That kind of fuels his confidence.
That makes sense.
Yeah. So, even though ends up obviously hurting people close to him, I don't think it's something where he's incapable of relating to other people. It's more that he's just young and feels powerful and feels he's getting all these things that he wants by acting the way he does. And so it's kind of a reinforcing loop.
Yeah, which is, it seems to be, I mean, somewhat of the theme there. We obviously won't be giving away endings and stuff like that, but he is being rewarded for his behaviors in many ways. So it almost ties into the idea that a lot of guys act shitty because a lot of women might reward those bad behaviors. So what a lot of guys will say is like, oh, women just like assholes. Women like being treated like shit. Now, there's probably a small percentage of women that do have some sort of psychological issues where they literally like to be abused, you know, I don't know if it's physically, but emotionally or whatever. But, you know, most women, that's not the case. So people will say, oh, it's behaving like awful person that gets a woman attracted. But personally, I don't think that's really what it is. So my thoughts on this, and I'd be curious to hear what yours is, I think sometimes that those attractive characteristics that you mentioned, which are confidence, you know, being assertive, not really caring what other people think, those oftentimes are on, you know, not literally, but on the same gene as just not giving a fuck about anyone, you know, maybe taking it to the extreme, being extremely manipulative. And it's not necessarily that women are attracted to the bad behavior aspect. It's just that that's so often coupled with those attractive aspects. Whereas a guy who might be maybe more trustworthy, kind, polite, respectful, it's not that women don't like that. It's that so often that's often coupled with really being meek, you know, subservient, submissive, all that.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I think anytime a guy has a few qualities that are really, really strong, it can kind of make women not really notice the parts of them that are really destructive or negative or hurtful.
Yeah.
As especially when people are young.
Sure.
Early 20s.
Kids are, yeah, pretty
yeah,
young.
They're all about 21, so, or most of the characters are. So
right.
I think, especially when you're a young man, you're not really sure who you are. And so you kind of try on a persona. And when it starts, at least for me, and I know a lot of my friends, one of the biggest topics in your brain when you're in your 20s is women. So I think when you try on a persona and you get results from it, it starts to reinforce itself.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of draw a comparison with, like, people want to think that, like, sports figure, like, star athletes are role models for kids, and celebrities are role models for kids. And I think people don't really think about, just because you have a really strong skill in one area does not mean that you have skills in other areas. So just because you're an amazing actor doesn't mean you're a great husband or father. And same thing with being attractive in a lot of ways, especially when you're younger, is that you could have a lot of really attractive qualities and still not be a good person.
Right.
And I think that's a really hard thing for a lot of young men to come to grips with when they see other quote unquote assholes doing better than them with women.
Yeah.
I think it hurts men and makes them hate women in a way.
Yeah.
And really it's not that women are bad or anything. It's just they're responding to value in the world. And, like, that's all that really matters as far as getting things, getting money, getting women, getting anything. If you're on the side of value or if you have enough value, you can basically overcome any sort of negative qualities.
Right.
Yeah. So,
What we see in the case of Patrick is that he has some positive qualities for sure. He's, like, a smart guy. He wants to defy some social conventions, which can be attractive. And actually, pretty much everything good that's happened in our society has been people saying, like, no, let's stop burning people who aren't really witches. You know, somebody had to come out and say that. So that's pretty awesome. And then he has his negative aspects, which over time do start to catch up to him. So you clearly, based on this book, have a pretty decent understanding of psychology of, I would say, both, you know, men and women. I think the women portrayed in this are pretty realistic in that they're intellectually turned off by Patrick, as in they're rationalizing. I mean, they're using kind of the rational part of their brain literally and saying, okay, he is not here in my best interest. He's doing these things that I do not like. Yet then just some other, the animal magnetism. I mean, the fact that he's physically attractive for sure, but it's, if he was just like a studly dude who didn't behave the way he did, his attraction would probably be a lot more limited. It's primarily, or at least very strongly, also his behavior and how he puts himself out there and all that. So I guess what I'm getting at is, would you say that there's a way for certain men to be able to unlock their masculinity, which might be seen as bad boy, whatever you want, without going too far into, you know, plunging into that abyss and destroying everything around you and eventually yourself?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's one of the biggest challenges for men in their 20s and 30s is, especially if you came, like, in high school, if you were kind of an outsider or just a nice guy who didn't get girls for whatever reason, I think, at least in my experience, when I got to college, I wanted to try on a different approach with women.
Hmm.
I had kind of been always seen as a friend, in high school. I was a virgin all through high school.
Hmm.
So, I was kind of a class clown type guy. and wanted to kind of entertain people and make them laugh, but didn't really get anywhere with women. So when I got to college, I was like, oh, I'm going to be really assertive. I'm going to meet as many people as I can, and I'm going to be kind of a dick. I'm just going to say whatever is in my head.
Yeah.
And I was so kind of emotionally conflicted with being young and kind of being scarred from high school.
Right.
And I was very insecure. I would say a lot of things to women that were just very polarizing and mean a lot of the time.
Yeah.
But for some reason, when I got to college, I was able to just be very confident for some reason, kind of like I almost didn't know any better.
Yeah.
And it started to like pay off.
Right.
In a lot of ways. But it's not really a sustainable way of meeting women because it's coming from a place of insecurity.
So the persona, you mean?
Yeah, exactly. Whereas I know a lot of guys in college who were very good with women, but no one hated them.
Yeah.
They had a lot of friends that were girls, but they were also getting a lot of girls, and it was, you know, they obviously had their downsides, but they didn't say as outlandish of things, and they did just as well or better. So I think when you're coming from a place of insecurity, it can work temporarily, but especially with younger women who are less experienced and aren't really concerned about that sort of stuff. Right. Yeah, man. But eventually the women are going to find out if you're insecure or not. And I think the best thing you can do is handle your own self-esteem as far as just your own personal happiness and with women too.
Well, it's interesting how you mentioned sort of that phase that you went through. That may well be a thing that you have to go through, you know, if you're trying to break yourself out of a certain mold. I mean, one would like to think ideally that no, you can just make that gradual, evolution in from like a guy who is maybe not as assertive and all that. And all of a sudden, no, you're just bringing all positive elements into your life. And then all of a sudden you are that guy you always wanted to be. It might well be that sometimes, you know, there's obviously going to be peaks and valleys. It may be that you're like, maybe you are too nice to people all the time. And maybe for a little while, this is not advocating being abusive or anything like that, but like maybe once in a while you have to start saying things that, you know, people will find disagreeable just to practice that, to show that, all right, just because somebody doesn't agree with everything I'm saying, especially if you're coming from a people pleaser background, I sort of came through that too. Maybe that's a useful phase.
Yeah. I think you have to go through periods where you experiment.
Yeah.
Especially when you're young and you're kind of still growing into your personality.
That's a good point.
You're never going to know where the line is until you go across it.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, if you're someone who's has a lot of wounds, psychological wounds, and not a lot of social experience, it can create a loop where you are turning a lot of people off, and it's kind of driving you further and further down. Whereas I kind of see myself as fortunate where I was trying on this new personality a little bit and I was getting some success with it. So it gave me time to kind of get a feel for what's appropriate in social situations and when it's just not useful to be a dick. Because most of the time you don't need to be a dick.
Right. It's, the nice thing about college is that you're in that temporary environment. It's not going to be the rest of your life. It's not necessarily like your office where you're going to be there for 10 years. So that's a little bit safer kind of incubator for your personality to test it out. But, you know, some guys are older. Like I was older before I could figure out this stuff about myself. So I didn't get the opportunity to really practice any of that in college, which part of me regrets. What are you going to do? But the college aspect for sure, just having this little temporary aspect of your personality, but you know, that can be done. And would you say maybe the best way to go about that is being aware of that? You're like, all right, tonight maybe I'm going to go out, and because I know I'm always trying to make everyone happy, I'm going to say, you know, I'm going to talk to five people and be like, I don't really like your shirt. And that's, you know, that seems bad, but that's such a minor kind of thing. But even that alone, I know for me, that would have been a big deal years ago. Just like the idea of, I think it was partially, like anything, it was partially coming from a good place. Like I don't want to make people unhappy, and I still don't. And I don't think that that's a positive characteristic, but I do think it was, you know, maybe too extreme, where I just didn't want to alienate anyone. And at the same time had this weird complex where I could make myself superior by being nicer than everyone else. And then I could be like, oh, well, they're not nice and they're a shitty person, and that's why they're getting laid and not me. Whereas that probably had nothing to do with it.
Yeah. It's definitely something that, it's a hard thing to really explain without going through it. I mean,
yeah.
you do have to kind of just say whatever you're feeling a lot of the time.
Yeah.
Cause if you never do that, you'll never get a feel for what it's like to be comfortable in your own skin. And I think that's like a lifelong pursuit.
Totally.
Getting over your own shit, especially if you had a tumultuous childhood.
Yeah.
But, I think that's one of the biggest qualities that women look for, is that just a guy who's comfortable saying and having his own opinions and just saying whatever is on his mind without being
right.
negative.
Yeah,
like
you can do it
from a place of positivity. So like, let's say a girl says something and you don't agree with it, you can just not say anything, as opposed to being negative. Because if you constantly are negative about it, it shows that you don't have self-esteem,
or
that you're like scared or
dark and depressed.
Yeah,
that's
dark.
Not cool either. Because like,
yeah.
If all your thoughts are about suicide, like maybe don't talk about it.
yeah. And I mean, if you're women just want to have fun, so most of the time.
Yeah.
So if you're always negative, and you're not going to get any, you're not going to get women, and you're not going to have very many friends. So if that's you, I would say first handle trying to get out of depression or whatever is making you negative. Maybe it's the wounds from your past.
Yeah.
Maybe you were hurt as a child, in whatever way, psychologically,
right.
emotionally. So, there's a way to be firm about your own beliefs and who you are without being negative. And I think that's really when you become really attractive, is when you're strong, but you're also, uplifting towards people.
Well, so yeah, absolutely. And I agree with that. And I think those are excellent points. So let's bring this back to Patrick, because he is good at that. So he is able to kind of be sinister, but humorous at the same time. So it comes across as, very confident and like, ooh, yeah, he is a bad boy, but also he is, you know, he's certainly not mopey and just coming across as murderous or anything, you know, to those extremes.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to think of a specific circumstance in which, all right, well, let's talk about so there's one character, her name is Mallory. So she's engaged to some other guy that Patrick works with, right?
Yep.
And he, you know, they come across each other in this strange circumstance with this car accident. And so all of a sudden their worlds collide, and he is trying to get her, you know, knowing full well that, you know, she's with this other guy, which obviously is one of the crappier things he's doing. But he kind of leads her into this, and then she kind of goes back and forth and back and forth, and eventually it's starting to work on her. So let's kind of talk about how he uses his, like, his tease. Now, before getting into this, no one should be trying to steal somebody away from their fiance. And of course, typically if a woman is being drawn in by somebody else, it's probably because something else is going on with that relationship, which is the case in this. But just because I thought it was such an intriguing situation of a woman who is like not sure if she's into him, he's not forcing the situation at all. She clearly has attraction. She's like, no, maybe, yeah. So that I think is a lot of dating, you know, again, not coercion, not manipulation, but women are like, oh, there's always going to be an aspect of pretty much every man that a woman might be interested in. And then it's just whether or not the pros outweigh the cons. So in the case of Patrick, how did he sort of start drawing in Mallory? Then we could talk about the elements that were good about that, that maybe people want to pay attention to. And then the elements are like, that's just a shitty thing to do.
Yeah. Well, to start out, he was really persistent. So he kept finding ways and like little mini excuses to bump into her. And also it helped that her fiance, which is a character named Teddy, he works with Patrick. So she's commonly coming back to the office that they both work at. But whenever he sees Mallory, he's bringing her fun. He's joking around. Mm-hmm. He's being very sexual and flirty, but in a fun way, not like, you know, I want to fuck,
right,
or whatever. Like,
yeah,
nothing like dark,
yeah,
or demented or anything like that. And it's kind of this this sequence of events where at the same time that Patrick's coming into her life and kind of offering her this fun, exciting, adventurous sort of vibe, her fiance kind of used to be an adventurous type and kind of swept her off her feet. But since they've gotten engaged, he's stopped putting effort into the relationship.
Yeah.
And he's become negative towards her and kind of like controlling.
Right.
And he's short with her.
Right.
He doesn't pay her very much attention. All the telltale signs.
Yeah.
They live far out in the woods, out of town.
Mm-hmm.
So they're kind of in this bigger house all alone. And she's just gotten engaged and she's about to get married. Yet this guy she got engaged to is changing and he's becoming darker and more standoffish. So
right. Good point.
It's not just that Patrick's very confident and fun with her. It's also that she's not getting the emotional fulfillment from her fiance anymore. And he's hurting her, in fact. So, and the more Patrick and her get closer and closer, the more angry her fiance becomes.
Right.
So it even makes his bad qualities aggravated.
Yeah.
So
it makes
it's
almost more likely
cycle
for,
yeah,
her to fall into the arms of the other guy. Well,
yeah.
So that brings up actually something that we should also discuss, which is, well, first of all, we'll go into a little more of what Patrick does, but then we'll go back to what Teddy is doing wrong so far as here's what not to do in a relationship, which, you know, everyone's always afraid of the girlfriend cheating, and sometimes there's not much you can do, you know? But what you can do is not being shitty in your relationship. It's making sure that you're not taking her for granted. But let's go a little more into the Patrick stuff with so I remember there's the scene where he gets her down into a bar, like kind of like an underground bar or something like that. And I think that's the first time when the sexual flirtation kind of goes to the next step. Does he kind of try to kiss her? What happens there?
So Mallory's working this job where she's unhappy. It's kind of down on this area. It's kind of like a main street area in this town. And Patrick had just been spending time with his mother and this younger girl that is looped into the story.
Yeah.
But he bumps into Mallory. He convinces her to come down and have a beer with him while they're both waiting to go get on with the rest of their days. And he's flirting with her, but he's also kind of hitting on some serious topics. So she's getting to know him a little bit more. And he starts dancing with her. So she gets to see more of his kind of fun-loving side. Just pure fun, not like manipulative or anything like that. She kind of has a sense that he's a little bit manipulative.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's joking around with her. But he's kind of also testing her in a lot of ways. He's saying some stuff that pisses her off.
Right.
But he doesn't flinch. He just owns it, basically.
Yeah.
And she's attracted to that. So after they're flirting, dancing a little bit, drinking, and kind of getting to know each other a little bit better, he walks her back upstairs and tries to kiss her.
Yeah.
And she ends up slapping him.
Right.
but she also feels kind of connected to him after that.
Yeah.
So it's kind of emotional drama that kind of binds them together.
So what you're saying is that if you make an advance on a woman, I'm just kidding. But she obviously, she's giving, in a sense, mixed signals. Let's go away from what he is perceiving, because probably at this point, that would be maybe an indication to not be pursuing it in most circumstances.
Yes.
But going into her psychology now, so she knows she's supposed to be with a guy, a different guy, but then she's being drawn to this guy. She slaps him and all that, but what we find out in her head is, I mean, clearly she's spending all this time with him. She thinks about him a fair amount and keeps thinking about calling him and all that. So there's some complications sometimes with that repulsion and attraction in the female mind.
Yeah.
But again, always to put out the disclaimer, if a woman is saying no to you or demonstrating anything, or she's
it's a story.
Yes,
it's just
this isn't real.
It's not real.
It's fiction. But it does portray a lot of the complexity of sexuality, how aggression is a part of it, how a woman's emotional state can play very heavily into it, where she's into a guy for at a certain given moment and then not at all the next. And, you know, that's kind of how it goes sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah, I wanted all the characters in the story to kind of battle their reptilian brain.
Yeah.
So the things that you want, whether it be sex or affection from other people, or it could be anything. It could be any sort of addiction. Not even an addiction fully, but anything you want that's not necessarily good for you.
Yeah.
I wanted all the characters to kind of be stretched by wanting something, but having to kind of sacrifice a part of them to get it.
Yeah, well, that definitely comes across. So let's go a little bit into the Teddy, so the husband of the woman, or the fiance of the woman there. So, because again, like I was saying before, the way that you can front load your relationships if you're afraid of the woman cheating or whatever is, first of all, I mean, if she she cheated on you to be with you, then she might not cheat again. That's one indicator. But aside from that, I mean, that's not always true, but oftentimes there's only so much you can do. But one of the things is making sure that a woman does not feel taken for granted once you got her, you know, because everyone wants to be like, oh, look, we do all these fun things and look at how cool I am. And then you get her. And, you know, a lot of times it's because that passion does cool. That's going to be a part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, it is very easy for, like, oh, well, this guy, he's doing all these crazy things for me now and you don't. And it's like, well, yeah, he also just met you and hasn't been with you for 2 years.
Yeah.
But that being so, you're never going to be able to, it's not suggesting you have to constantly pander to a woman. But being aware that you need to keep that fire lit. So what are some of the things that Teddy, you touched on a little bit, but let's go a little more into that. What did Teddy do wrong to make him, to make Mallory susceptible to a character like Patrick?
Mm-hmm. Well, so after he proposes to her, at the time, the backstory for her is that they were both living in the town. She just got out of college, and she had lots of friends and was having lots of fun. He kind of ignores what she wants, and since he makes a lot more money than her, he kind of forces her to move out of town where she's more isolated, and he can kind of control her more, which is obviously not something you would ideally like to do, because you want both your goals to align if you're with a girl. But so that's kind of his first mistake,
right.
And she resents him for that. She starts to feel bored and feels like there's nothing really stimulating in her life.
Yeah.
He also kind of rubs it in her face that he makes more money than her. He treats her kind of like he's responsible for everything good that they have.
Right.
And it doesn't really go into it, but there's kind of questions as to whether he resents her in some way for that.
Yeah.
Interesting. And then, I've seen guys that do this, and I've seen girls that do this also. They kind of trap the person where they're great on the front side.
Yeah.
So, like, all the way up until getting married, they're great. They're doing all the right things in the relationship, but then they just, once they have you, they stop.
Yes.
They just start doing whatever the hell they want to do with little or no regard.
Yeah.
And so he starts ignoring her. He spends less time with her. She wants to go out and have a double date with their friends, and he doesn't want to, you know, he doesn't want to do that. He snaps at her all the time.
Right.
So he's just lots of anger.
Yeah. And we find out over time, we learn a bit more about who he really is deep inside. Yeah. And maybe he's not like the greatest guy in the world. So yeah, well I think that's just relevant so far as it ties into that whole aspect of, oh, does that mean that these guys, these sinister, you know, dark triad guys are out there and they're always going to steal my girl? Because I know a lot of people are really insecure about that. And it's like, shit happens sometimes, but there's a lot you can do to make your woman happy and not make, you know, her be driven to the arms of, you know, whatever.
Player.
A player, exactly. So let's talk a little bit about the opposite of the player in this case. So, I mean, so there's Josh, and he's sort of like in the middle character. Like, he definitely has some of those alpha characteristics, you know, but let's leave him aside a little bit, even though he plays the second fiddle to Patrick. So in many ways, he is the, like, technically the beta, there's alpha beta. So then there's George, who is, I don't know if you call him the gamma or what some people call, like, a cuck or whatever.
He's the cuck.
So George, well, do you want to, you set up George. George's situation.
Yeah. So Patrick's girlfriend, Tiffany, her best friend is a girl named Simone, who, and they're both very pretty, popular girls at this college. They have a friend from high school named George, who, and George has been secretly in love with them all through high school. Like, fantasizes about them and just wants to be with either of them. That's like his dream. So he's living in Denver, but he comes down to visit for a weekend, and it kind of reminds him about how much he's infatuated with both of them. Yeah. And he is almost the antithesis of Patrick in that he kind of hides his emotions. He hides how he feels about them at all times.
Yeah.
He's fantasizes about them. There's a scene where he's like, after he comes and visits, he ends up moving to Durango to be closer to them.
Yeah.
And he's looking out at the window of his new apartment at them, and they're down in the parking lot, and he like goes to the shower to masturbate.
Mm-hmm.
So he's obsessed with them basically, but they see him as their best guy friend, almost like their gay friend.
Yeah.
And so he's a total non-sexual entity,
right,
to them. And this sort of mask that he wears creates an extreme amount of darkness inside him, to where he just feels like a nothing deep down.
So the reason I want to bring up George is because I would say that maybe some of the listeners and folks who check out Introvert Unbound might feel like they identify in some ways with George. I know in many ways in my past, I'm like, I'm the guy who is wanted to make stuff happen, but yeah, sort of almost hid it from myself. Like, felt like I couldn't put that out there because I was afraid of being rejected or who knows exactly what, or thinking that I was so pure that, you know, all that weird stuff. So I would say George is a pretty great example of what not to do.
Yeah.
And, you know, again, we're not going to give away where things go with that, but what could be ways in which a George character can kind of grow as a person and not necessarily become the Patrick character either? Because so those are the two extremes. I think you painted those really well, those two extremes, and they're both fucking dark. Like, it's both fucking dark to be like, ha, everything is mine. And then also like, oh, you know, there's no, you know, there's nothing for me. This is all shit all the time. Like, one is like, you'll go out there and destroy everything because you're just so self. The other is like, you know, like a murder suicide thing. You're like, shoot everyone down and then kill yourself. Like, that's, they're both pretty not good.
Yeah, I probably shouldn't laugh about that.
Well, no, I mean, it's, it's funny because it's true. We got to deal with it.
Yeah. I think where most guys go wrong with that is even if you, I think every guy who's not a natural has been in a position where they fell into the friend zone for a while with a girl for whatever reason, but secretly they wanted her the whole time.
Yeah.
So I think everyone can relate to that respect of George, but I would say if it's okay to, even if you've been friends with a girl for a long time, you can tell her, you know, that you're interested in,
yeah.
in dating her. But where most guys go wrong is that when the girl rejects them, which happens almost every time,
yeah.
They get really hurt.
Yeah.
And they start acting weird or they get angry. And I think if you just remain calm and let things go on, maybe a year or two down the road, you might actually have a chance.
Right. Don't blow it.
But if you freak out, which you probably will, you know, most guys probably will.
Yeah.
You're done. Like
yeah.
your friendship's done. Everything's done with that girl. She doesn't want to be around that uncomfortable energy
yeah.
anymore. I had this happen in my own life where, this girl I see on a daily basis, we were very friendly and I'm just not super attracted to her. She asked me out and I told her I was seeing another girl, which is true.
Yeah.
And so she took it as a rejection, but she started to act really weird.
Yeah.
Like she wouldn't make eye contact with me anymore. She wouldn't like sit by me anymore. So she was kind of like the guy who gets all butt hurt when
yeah.
they get rejected. And whereas if she had just acted normal, who knows?
Yeah.
You know, maybe down the later on, my taste would change.
Right.
Cause she's not like fat or anything like that. So.
Right.
But I think that just recently crystallized that in my mind is that the types of guys who portray themselves as a friend when they really want to date the girl, they're so emotionally scattered
yeah.
that they're so scared to ask the girl out or let them know that they like them that
yeah.
when the girl inevitably rejects them, they freak out.
Well, they're not genuinely there necessarily to be the girl's friend. They
no.
have ulterior motives,
yeah.
which is nothing wrong with having a sexual interest towards a woman, but
yeah.
owning that is what you're saying.
Yeah. And that's just like a lot of the time it's a lack of self-worth where you're
yeah.
like the only way she wouldn't actually want to date me.
Yeah.
So
right.
the only way I can spend time around her is to be friendly with her. That's not the case all the time.
Sure.
Sometimes you're just fearful from like social conditioning and whatever. But a lot of the time it's like, this girl wouldn't like me for whatever reason, so...
Right. Of course, that's going to be a
yeah.
self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah.
So you're saying is, never be friends with pretty girls. That's your lesson.
I would say, if you're dating a pretty girl already and her friends are hot,
yeah.
then you can be friends with them, and that's fine. But if you're really attracted to a girl, I would say ask her out first.
Yeah.
If she shuts you down, then maybe be friends.
Right.
But it's going to take someone who's pretty secure to be able to actually be friends with
them. That infatuation, and then, you know, if she starts asking you to move her stuff, you know, that's when you have to start being really careful about
yeah.
being, you know, maybe she's not deliberately taking advantage of you, but in essence,
yeah.
that's what's happening. And that gets you in a really dark place. You're like, I'm moving all her stuff, and this guy gets to fucking, you know, like,
yeah.
and that's not a good place
yeah.
to be for anyone.
I'd say just remain calm and just tell her, thanks, but no thanks.
Right. So let's just do a little summarizing of everything, and then we can let you go. Appreciate you taking the time
yeah,
to talk.
Of course.
So I think that people should read Edges because it's super well written. It's just an interesting story. It kept me really great, and I read all the time, so I'm a writer. And honestly, I couldn't put it down. Like, it was hard for me to put it down. And I'm not sure if it was definitely the writing is good. It's extremely strong writing. There's just no question about that. Just, you know, everything from the structure of the book to the phrasing of the sentences, it's high quality stuff. But that alone is not enough. It's the story that's really driving. And I think for me, it's because I saw elements of myself in each of these characters. I'm like, oh, fuck. You know, I'm like, oh, George, you loser, get some shit together. And then also like, oh, sorry, George. And then like Patrick, I'm like, all right. You know, like I found myself actually really jealous of this fake character throughout
yeah.
the book. And so like part of me is reading this, I'm like, I want to see like a comeuppance.
Justice will be done
for Patrick. But of course, you know, who's to say what happens in the at the end. But that's why I recommend it, and I think people should read it. In your mind, how did that whole psychology of male, female, was that like the driving force behind you wanted to convey just the different aspects of society, or is it more the, you know, just to get your inner demons out?
Yeah. I think there was a lot of that, getting the inner demons out. I think I saw a lot of myself in not just Patrick, but also Josh and George, which are the other two main male characters.
Right.
Even in the women, though, I see certain aspects of myself.
Yeah.
So I think it was just kind of playing with the idea that you're not a perfect person and that you're going to make mistakes and that, you know, ideally a lot of these characters are brought down by their weaknesses and that, you know, I don't want to be brought down by my weaknesses. So
yeah.
I think that, whenever you read a book that's kind of like a tragedy sort of story, it kind of reminds you of your own weaknesses and that you have control over your life in a way that you can make choices.
Yeah.
And you can see where you're vulnerable and you can see where you kind of fall into the same traps over and over again. And I think that's what these characters do, is they become victims of the traps they set for themselves.
Yeah.
And I think since my relationship with my wife was breaking down, I kind of got perspective on where I went wrong and maybe where she went wrong.
Yeah.
And that, you know, we kind of brought each other down in that way.
Yeah.
And I think that can happen to everybody at some point in their life. They'll be in a relationship where it starts out great and then kind of the dark side,
yeah,
of each of you kind of tears each other down inadvertently. I don't think the characters in the book are totally cognizant of that because they're so young. They,
yeah,
don't really have perspective on how they're sabotaging themselves.
Right.
And I think that's what makes it interesting.
For sure. So developing that awareness about yourself is a way that you can maybe curtail the disasters, you know, taking some personal accountability, you know, like, what did I do in that situation? You know, what can I do better by myself? What are the negative aspects of my personality? What are the things that I can maybe improve about myself? So all those things, you know, maybe the characters in this could have benefited from.
Absolutely.
So how do people purchase Edges by C.G. Carroll?
If you go to Amazon, type in C.G. Carroll Edges, it'll come up. You can buy a hard copy or a paperback, I mean, or a Kindle format. And I believe you can get it on Barnes and Noble as well.
Awesome.
So,
awesome. Well, it's a great read and I recommend it to anyone listening to this. It's not just people who like reading books and all that, but people who want to learn about themselves and want to learn about how to interact with women and just the psychology behind it. I recommend it.
It's not really a romance book. It's more of like a psychology, psychological, not quite a thriller, but definitely like a expose on the psychology of people and relationships. So.
Yeah, it's thriller-esque for sure because it's riveting and it kind of drives you through and then there's that darkness underlying it. It's, mm-hmm, yeah, so definitely people check that out.
Yep.
All right, well, thanks.
Thanks a lot for having me.